This is Mae Brussel. It is tape number 853, and it is April the 11th, 1988. I want to make one request before I get into the context of the material today. Those of you subscribing to these broadcasts, I'm going back to the old format I had where all the orders came through the house here, requests for tapes, and then I would pass them on to the tape center. If you want to subscribe to the tapes, continue subscribing, or you have friends that want to start subscribing, write to me, Mae Brussel, and you have my address because you're taking them now, and send your checks to me, and I will give them to Al Kuntzer and to the tape center. The reason I want to do that, get back to that old system, is that there are a lot of people that call me on the telephone, a lot of people that write letters wanting bibliography sheets, wanting information and research, and I don't have time to answer everybody, but I always answer World Watchers, people that listen to the broadcasts, that listened on the radio or subscribed to the tapes. And if they were regular followers, I always gave them attention and time. And as all of you know, my number is it's listed in the telephone book, and I will spend as much time with you as we have on various matters. But I don't have that much time to divide between you and my own work and the people that do not subscribe, and I have no way of knowing any longer. So if I have the orders come through the house, I'm familiar with the names and can recognize the names and know you personally in that way, and it'll be easier for me to know who I'm talking to or if I want to talk to them at all. So now that that's over, we'll get on with the resurrection of Richard Nixon. I'm sure some of you watched him on Meet the Press. Some of you might not have. This was Sunday morning, April the 10th. Richard Nixon was on there answering all kinds of questions about foreign policy. But one of the most, not shocking things, but one of the most disturbing things, of course, to come out of his mouth, and I can't believe this isn't the exact reason why he was on. He was asked the lead question, what would you do to solve the problems in the Middle East? And he said, well, I would recommend that the next president, and of course that'll be George Bush, make Henry Kissinger a full-time heavyweight negotiator assigned to the Middle East. He said, whether it is a Republican or a Democrat, Kissinger is a terrific negotiator. I would suggest that the next president, be it Dukakis or Bush, not Jesse Jackson, would be well advised to give Henry Kissinger the title of ambassador plenipotentiary, give him a year, and he will work out some settlement, Nixon said. He ruled out Jesse Jackson as being too far to the left for such a position. Let me remind you, in case most of you haven't forgotten, that Henry Kissinger was behind the orders to overthrow Chile and put in that dictator Augusto Pinochet, the far-right fascist Nazi who seems to be in power for a lifetime with very few freedoms in Chile. Henry Kissinger was given, with his mentor Fritz Kramer, all the policies, along with Richard Nixon, of Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos, and left a mess there. He was in charge of South African policies, left a mess there, was running back and forth in the Middle East between the Arabs and the Jews, and has left the area in a disaster. And then, as soon as Senator Henry Jackson died, the day after the downing of the KAL airplane, he gave the Central American area to Henry Kissinger, who turned it over to Elliot Abrams. So look at Central America, what policies we've had down there, and the death squads are still operating in El Salvador, Guatemala, and you know what's happened down there. The place is left in shambles. Honduras with the riots, Panama, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, divided because of the drug dealing of the Contras, the intelligence community literally moving in there. So the great Richard Nixon survives after all these years, the first time on television in 20 years, and says, give the Middle East to Henry Kissinger. That's one of the strong reasons I've always felt that Kissinger came over as disguised as a Jew, but is a German and not a Jew. It's hard to believe that King Hussein of Jordan or the Saudi family or the Kuwaitis or Syria or anyone in the Middle East would sit and deal with Henry Kissinger being Jewish. It's very difficult to see him physically kiss the heads of these Arab countries and then go from there to Israel. Israel would deal with Kissinger the German and think he's a Jew, but I don't believe that these very, very anti-Semitic Arab groups would let the likes of Henry Kissinger make deals for them any more than his being literally on the board of Chase Manhattan and running the Council of Foreign Relations and all the things that Henry Kissinger has done. So that was, after 20 years, Nixon on television to say we need Henry Kissinger, whether it is a Republican or a Democrat. And then, of course, behind him in the National Security Council would be Sven Kramer and Fritz Kramer. So visualize what you are seeing. I said last week I'd do start doing items on George Bush. I'm just going to mention one brief report in U.S. News and World Report, because if I do Bush for a long period of time, I might throw up. This is a picture of George Bush with his possible cabinet. Of course, Secretary of State would be Jim Baker, Secretary of the Treasury now. He's very close to George Bush. And then there's Nicholas Brady, close to the vice president since Yale. Brady is a very strong knight of Malta, right under J. Peter Grace. And I don't know if he was in the order of the cross skull and crossbones. I'll have to look that up. But they've been close since Yale. But the most interesting appointment or possible appointment for cabinet is the picture of John Tower, chairman of the Armed Services Committee while in the Senate. And John Tower, of course, covered up the entire National Security Council. The Tower Commission made sure after the Iran-Contra scandal that errors were made by people, not the National Security Council. And here's George Bush as vice president, who should have been investigated because he attends the National Security Council meetings. And the possibility of Tower, the brother-in-law, he's since divorced his wife, but has still remained the brother-in-law of Samuel Cummings. You can't forget that connection. The great arms merchant who armed Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, and Carlos, and the likes of all the terrorists who work with fascist Nazis and the intelligence community. This is a possible cabinet position, a picture of George Bush with these faces, and I'll get back to Bush later, probably a little bit each week. The big story of the week, of course, were the hearings of Senator John Kerry, the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee. I'm not sure how many of you subscribers get C-SPAN, how many of you were lucky enough to get up at 6:30 in the morning to get the hearings or stay up till 3 in the morning to take the other end of the hearings if you miss some during the day. I listened to all of them, and I just want to do a quick resume of who the witnesses were and share them with you, some of which you've read in your newspapers, so I'm not going to try and repeat that, but just get some highlights. The first day, one of the witnesses was Michael Palmer, and Michael Palmer is in prison right now. At one time, he was in Colombia. He was in a jail in Colombia, and he got out. He was caught with drug trafficking in a plane that broke down there. And besides the charges of drug trafficking, as soon as he got out of Colombia, he came to the United States, and the CIA and the General Accounting Office started paying him to send supplies to the Contras. Legal funds were put in the hands of Congress for humanitarian aid. And, of course, Palmer was flying $40 million worth of marijuana into the United States, sending guns and so forth down to the Contras, and had a dual role of smuggling and supplying the Contras with the humanitarian aid and then bringing the drugs back to the United States. If Congress allocated through the State Department that these people could have this humanitarian aid, why did they use a pilot who flew with Vortex, a CIA airline that was listed as one of their vendors? Why didn't they just send it on a Pan American plane or whatever goes down to Costa Rica? But Palmer flew weapons down, and then he brought narcotics back, and his operation was set up by the CIA, and he said he worked with Felix Rodriguez, who also was closely associated with George Bush. Another witness was Francis McNeil, former State Department Deputy Director. He said the top Reagan officials in the CIA, William Casey, Assistant Secretary of State Elliot Abrams, worked with known drug smugglers, and that some operations involved the aide to George Bush, the Chief of Staff Daniel Murphy, and of course Murphy is linked to General Noriega and the drugs from Panama. Joseph Blandon, who testified last month, a former aide to Noriega, testified again, and he said that the plans that he discussed between the National Security Council, Oliver North, and Noriega where their plans to go into Nicaragua from Costa Rica provoke an excuse to invade Nicaragua. Then George Morales testified. He said he gave several millions of dollars from cocaine sales in the United States to the Contras. He was involved in narcotic shipments from 1984 to 86. And the interesting part of his testimony is that he used Montego Bay in Jamaica with the help of the police authorities, and nobody stopped him. Now, Montego Bay is the home base of the still-living William Stevenson, known as Intrepid, head of British intelligence, who formed the OSS with William Donovan, William Casey, Allen Dulles, William Colby, etc. Montego Bay is still open. And when the stories that LaRouche always repeating that the British intelligence has literally co-opted the drug market, it's interesting that Morales, working out of Montego Bay in Jamaica with the high authorities, was supplying the Contras and then putting millions of dollars of cocaine into the United States. He says the weapons that he took to the Contras went to an airstrip near John Hall's ranch, and Hall was linked to the CIA, linked to the Contra aide, also to Robert Owen, Oliver North, and the National Security Council. Morales met with three Contra officials, and he was told by two of them, Marcos Aguedo and Octavio Cesar, that they worked for the CIA. Gary Bessner, a pilot, flew the arms to the Contra, picked up cocaine. He worked closely with Morales, and Senator Kerry said that Bessner's testimony made it clear that the Contras involved in cocaine traffic and the Contra support process were linked. John Hall used to meet the planes of Gary Bessner each time the weapons took off. The weapons were sent down to him, and when that plane took off, it was loaded with the cocaine. This is a man, John Hall, who was under the pay of the National Security Council, the CIA, supervising this matter. The plane left Opa-locka, Florida, with weapons on them, and often landed in Ilopango Air Force Base with the drugs. And, of course, Mr. Bessner said that this is a U.S. military base and that they would know the planes were used for drug traffic. And just today, there was a long segment on television of Tommaso Busetta, the Italian Sicilian mafia chief. These hearings are separate from John Kerry's hearings. These are on La Cosa Nostra. Busetta, and most of you saw the picture of him behind screen so nobody can see his new face, was the kingpin between the drugs of Palermo, Italy, and Sicily, and Syria, down in San Paulo, Brazil, the nest of the cocaine dealer, Joseph Mengele. And his traffic went from Sicily and down to San Paulo and also involved with Syria and the United States. And, of course, that money went into E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch accounts and then back to Switzerland. And as I said on a previous broadcast, that was paying Agent. Now, one of the witnesses who was testifying at the hearings the first day wanted to talk about the Israeli arms that went down to the Contras that went to Panama. And then the Panamanians would deliver the arms to the Contras, and the planes then would pick up narcotics and bring them to the United States. And when the narcotics got to the United States, William Casey and Oliver North and the powers that be were aware that in return, drugs were coming into the United States. This testimony was in closed hearing, then it broke in the newspaper stories, and it was somewhat declassified after the hearings. The first day, we couldn't hear it on the television, but it was on the evening news, how the Israeli network provided drugs for the United States, and the shipment of arms that they would send down from Israel, away from Israel, were about $20 million, and then they'd fill those planes up with narcotics that flooded the United States. Then William Casey would pay the Israelis back the $20 million that they invested. And, of course, the street money, the value of the cocaine was worth much more than $20 million. As John DeLorean said, $20 million is worth $60 million on the streets. So the Israeli drug traffic operations were not on the televised hearings, but they were off the record and parts of them on the news. Now, one of the kingpins of the Panama-Israeli connections was described in the Miami Herald January 26, 1988, titled, Noriega Supported by Ex-Spy. U.S.-Israeli has to leave Panama. I don't think he's left there yet, but this is the story. Mike Harari, H-A-R-A-R-E, is a simple Israeli businessman who lives in Panama. He's an arms dealer close to the Panamanian strongman Noriega, and there have been orders to have Harari leave Panama because it's embarrassing to have him there. But the article says Harari is known in Israeli intelligence circles as the former senior agent of the Mossad, the Israeli CIA, and former head of the Mossad assassination team that killed Palestinian terrorists in 1970. He trailed those famous Palestinians that were responsible for the Munich massacre and had them killed. The article said Noriega is surviving partly because of the help of Hariri. Hariri has acknowledged a hand in the Israeli military sales to Panama of at least $20 million. He's widely regarded in Israel as the unofficial broker for all Israeli-Panama commerce. Last 1986 totaled $17 million. He's known to be very close to Noriega. In fact, Noriega goes to Israel and has been seen there with him. Noriega, who heads the defense forces, this article goes on, explains his relationship with pushing out the former president, who's sitting waiting to be president again, Eric Arturo Duvalier. Now, incidentally, Duvalier is Jewish. I don't know if I mentioned this on another broadcast or not before. Duvalier is Jewish. His attorney is William Rogers, the law partner of the late William Casey. Rogers has mafia links going to the Bahamas to Resorts International. Rogers was Secretary of State under the great Richard Nixon. William Rogers was the attorney for the Shah of Iran. And that's why the arrangements of the Shah to go to Panama when he fled Iran. And so not only does a large hunk of money go back to Israel with weapons into Panama through Mike Hariri of the Mossad, but there was a tie here with Mr. Duvalier as well, being Jewish. And now the forces in the United States are closing in against Noriega, but Duvalier would be back in power with William Rogers as his attorney. Rogers also headed up the investigation of the Challenger with a complete cover-up of why that blew up. This article says Israeli government officials confirmed in Washington that Jerusalem would like to see Hariri leave the Panama area, but he's not a Mossad agent. He used to be. His name was Miki. He commanded their various assassination teams, but as a private citizen, he can stay in Panama if he wants to. He resigned from the Mossad in the late 70s when he moved to Panama and set up an import-export business. He was very close in 1979 to Panamanian leader General Omar Torrijos. He attended a meeting where an aide to President Carter asked Torrijos to give asylum for the Shah of Iran. And when Torrijos died in 1981 in a plane crash, I might say in a mysterious plane crash, which actually was a murder, Hariri then moved closer to Noriega, whose power became greater as soon as Torrijos was dead. Hariri arranged the Israeli training of Noriega's bodyguards. They're trained with mini Uzis, pistols, and so forth. Hariri has boasted to Israeli friends that Noriega is so close to Hariri that at the present time, or this was in 1986, that the general Noriega's daughter attends the Israeli school in Panama, even though she is Catholic and, as I say, has gone, made trips to the Holy Land with the general's wife. Hariri has. Noriega has made a number of unofficial trips to Israel. Noriega in fatigues, Hariri in a pilot's jumpsuit on a military base. They've been seen together. And Hariri and the Mossad have an indirect hand in other deals in Panama, a $20 million sale of Israeli radar, and farming needs that were set up in Panama by Israel. And then this article goes on to say that Israel uses Panama as a front to buy their technology that they can't get legally. If Israel ever needed anything for the Dimona, that's the nuclear reactor in Israel where the neutron bombs are made, the hydrogen bombs, if Israel ever needed anything for Dima, it could be done through Panama. So there you have a tangled web of Israel, the Mossad, weapons, the former president, who may be back again as president, we don't know, being Jewish, and the supplying of the capability for neutron bombs coming through Panama. And, of course, the CIA director George Bush and CIA director William Casey were very close to this operation. One person who couldn't testify at these hearings, who has an interesting history, and you will be hearing from him soon, his name is Carlo Gabeses. And there was a picture of him in the San Francisco Examiner this past Tuesday, April the 5th. He is linked to an arrest in 1983. And I want to make this very clear. He is a former used car dealer from Daly City in federal prison who in 1983 was arrested for cocaine trafficking, bringing cocaine into San Francisco, and sending money to the Contras. There was a link between narcotics traffickers and the government in the Western Hemisphere going back to 1983. And Cabezas testified about his involvement in the drug traffic. He's in jail now. He was supposed to appear at John Kerry's hearing. So if he appears in a few weeks when the hearings go back again, take note of this name and face, C-A-B-E-Z-A-S. Now, in the involvement of his arrest in the cocaine traffic, the reason this story is suppressed is because the powers that be, all the authorities knew about the links of drugs, the Contras, going back 5 years ago. But in the case of his arrest, Cabezas, a native of Nicaragua, told the story that the federal prosecutors who arrested him picked up $36,000 of cocaine money in San Francisco. $36,000, which isn't very much, but it was seized as drug money that was a payoff for selling drugs. It was seized from a man named Julio Zavala, Z-A-V-A-L-A, one of Cabezas' partners. And when the money was seized, the U.S. attorney took the money because he said this drug money belongs to the Contras, and he sent the money back to the Contras. It was drug money sent to the Contras. The man who did this process, his name is Joseph Rusinelli, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco. U.S. attorney Joseph Rusinelli gave the drug money that was picked up on the body of Cabezas, which was very little, to Costa Rica because he said, this belongs to you. The cocaine belongs in San Francisco, but the money is yours. It belongs to you. Now, Joseph Rusinelli is the same U.S. attorney that has covered up and dropped the prosecution of Michael Aquino in the San Francisco area, that dropped the Presidio trial on molestation, even though the children had venereal diseases and had been sexually abused. Now, the link of Michael Aquino to Oliver North, it goes back to the SEALs. Michael Aquino is an expert in mind control. He runs the U.S. Army Reserves out of St. Louis, Missouri right now. Oliver North was a victim of mind control in hospitals during the period of Vietnam and afterwards, and something was done to his brain. You can tell by his stature, his face, and by the medical records that you can't see, and the memos of Poindexter to North send him back to Bethesda, etc. Aquino was an expert at mind control, and Ollie North is the victim of some mind control processes. Aquino worked with the SEALs in Vietnam, that small elite force, and Ollie North is over the SEALs and worked with the SEALs. Those two things they have in common. Now, Ollie North worked with John Hall down in Costa Rica and with the trafficking of guns going down to the Contras and cocaine coming back to the United States with Robert Owen and with Oliver North and William Casey and Joseph Rusinelli. The same attorney that covered up the Presidio, that closed that case, refuses to prosecute it, also covered up the case of the cocaine and the Contras. So Joseph Rusinelli of San Francisco is guilty of hiding the cocaine traffic of the freedom fighters for all of these years until finally it's going to be opened up and more people will know about these connections. But he covered also up the Army Presidio molestations, which are involved in very serious matters. There was a TV special on Michael Aquino. I'll do more on that in a few moments. And one of the investigators in San Francisco said he still spends 80% of his time on the Aquino case. He was asked, what were the charges? The judge in the case asked him. He said, missing children and murdered children and serious matters. So that the same U.S. attorney that is covering up the Contras and Oliver North and John Hall and cocaine traffic is the same attorney covering up the Aquino Presidio molestation cases in San Francisco. And, of course, they're covered up at West Point, too, and around the country. So a lot more research has to be done on the U.S. attorney and his relationship back to Washington and why did he cover that case up. Another important part of this drug investigation was described in an article. This was April the 6th. Drug smuggler describes Noriega's negotiations. U.S. drug smuggler discussed deals with Panamanian official Noriega and General Torrijas, going back as early as 1979. Now, that date is important because when Jimmy Carter ran against Ronald Reagan, I said it is a question of who owns the drug turf. Just as there's the Coca-Cola versus Pepsi-Cola wars, Coca being Democrats, Pepsi being the Republicans, Jimmy Carter was very much a part and parcel of covering up and the people behind him getting their feet into the drug trafficking and working with Torrijos when he and Noriega were working. Now, Michael Vogel testified for hours on the television with John Kerry, and what he said that he and his associates paid U.S. and foreign government officials for cooperating for information and for such highly secret details as the radio frequency of Air Force One, the presidential jet. A federal official on the drugs payroll gave ringleaders the secret radio frequencies of government aircraft, including the one that the president rides in. When federal law enforcement officials learned that this ring had that frequency, Vogel said, "I'm sure it was disconcerting for them to know what we knew, where they were, and what they were talking about on President Reagan's plane." The next thing he testified was that Vogel's smugglers used flights of the same space shuttle Challenger when the Challenger went up. That was the cover for their drug runs because they knew that the Coast Guard ships were concentrating on areas waiting for a splashdown. So simultaneously, having the date of the launchings and so forth, it's interesting that he mentions the space shuttle Challenger because of the entanglement of former Secretary of State William Rogers being the attorney to investigate the Challenger accident, and William Casey, the CIA director, who is working with these drug dealers in and out of Panama, Costa Rica, El Salvador, funding the Contras, that they use specifically the Challenger. Whether he threw that in because he knows something, because he knows, I don't know. But that's important, I think, that he targets the Challenger, not the spaceship Discovery or whatever. And they could listen to conversations on the presidential airplane. He said that ringleaders routinely bribed officials, including the U.S., customs, law enforcement, and so forth. And once, when they were misguided and went into a Colombian army base, Vogel said, they simply paid $100,000 to release them so they could deliver their marijuana run. There's also the testimony of another person, Osvaldo Quintano, who did the drug dealing in Haiti with General Jean-Claude Paul and delivered 900 pounds of cocaine into the United States just in 1986. Something went wrong with the plane and the deal, but the purpose was to deliver it for the Haitians into the United States. So some of this is... in this first half hour is pretty shocking and convoluted. You might have to play the tape a few times to really get the importance and the tanglement of these people who were testifying. It was a really heavy week just sitting and listening and taking notes on these people and seeing the high points of these particular operations. Now, the sedition trial that I talked about for going from the time they were arrested in the last few weeks into detail, all of you know that they were acquitted of all charges. They didn't do anything wrong. 13 racists acquitted of sedition in the San Francisco Chronicle, April the 8th. But in the center of the box that tells the story of how they were acquitted is an article, "Merrill Lynch Executive Slain in His Office." And I didn't see that in many places. And of course, Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton were the two large acknowledged recipients of drug money, heroin money in New York that went to the Swiss banks, that also, as I repeated, helped to pay Ajahn, the man who shot the Pope. So right in the center of this, out of Boston, where these investigations are going into the first Boston bank, and Merrill Lynch, the story is a disgruntled stockbroker killed the vice president of Merrill Lynch in Boston. Well, you remember when Mr. Derrick, it's a long time ago, about a year ago, 2 years ago, was killed in his office, this man involved with the Iran-Contra guns and CIA affairs who was shot down. And, of course, there's never been a prosecution or anything in the paper since he was shot down. But here is a story in the middle of the acquittal of the sedition people where a Merrill Lynch executive was gunned down, a disgruntled person who... didn't like the vice president Merrill Lynch just at a time when these investigations are going on, and the article was in the center of the acquittal notice of the Nazis in Arkansas. We'll turn the tape over, and I just want to do a couple of reminders of what went on in that case, because while most of the people got the wire service story that they were acquitted. Very few people, I don't know how many, ever read Fort Smith, Arkansas newspaper, the Southwest Times Record. So I want to share a little bit more of that to let you know what they were printing back there. So we'll just take 1 second, turn this over, and continue on that matter.